All right, we're here with Kalika Moquin. How you doing, Kalika?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
I am good. I'm honored to have you on here. I know you're very, very busy as one of the most amazing and inspirational, not even female entrepreneurs, but just entrepreneurs. You're always have your hands in something. You're always doing something. I mean, you're definitely a motivation for a lot of us.
Certainly know how to flatter a woman. Thank you.
It's not flattery. It's all true. Trust me. I've known you for years and I've seen all the things you do. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you. I've been keeping pretty busy, especially at the start of the new year. I started on some new projects. So things have been good. But how have you been doing?
I've been good. Like I said, just trying to help inspire and motivate other people to kind of like pivot, like we're just talking about, and pivot, you know, make a life after hospitality. Cause who knows, you know, when and if it's going to come back.
I love it. I love everything about what you're doing.
I appreciate it. Thank you. So let's go. I like to start from back from the very beginning. Like when you got into the workforce, what were the first hospitality jobs you have? What titles you hold? What venues you work at? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I've been in hospitality pretty much my whole working life. When I was 16, I got a job at a movie theater. I started in concessions, worked my way all the way up to assistant manager over the course of 4 years. I moved to LA for a little while. I cocktailed at a club called Dimples. You could work as a cocktail waitress when you're 18 in Los Angeles at the time. I think you still can actually. And then, I was a busser at some restaurants. I moved back to Montana for a little bit and was a fine dining server. And then when I moved to Vegas, I got a job at Nine Steakhouse, serving in the lounge after I'd been here about a month. And then from there, I got a job at Ice Nightclub as a promoter, passing out flyers at the exits on the strip for $10 an hour. And then I go dance at Risque. I opened up Tao Nightclub. I opened up Pure and Tangerine Nightclub as a promoter. I was at Light as a promoter, Jet as a promoter, VIP host at Foundation Room on Monday nights, and then moved into marketing for Jet Nightclub, and then opened up Bear Pool in 2007 as their marketing director. And from there, I just kind of worked my way up the corporate ladder with Light Group. That ended in 2012. I then started my own company, Blacka Artists, which I still have today, which is a DJ management company. And then I have iParty Inc., which is a consulting company that basically programs talent for different nightclubs or pool parties or festivals or anyone that needs consulting. So that's kind of the progression of my hospitality career.
That's awesome. I mean, just hearing you say all those venues is like a little trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, I remember that.
Like, I know. I felt like I was kind of like a job whore. Like I just was like, I'm just going to work like all these jobs, like three or four at a time until like I find one that I just love. And that one I found that I loved was like Bear. And then like, I like gave all my like side jobs up and was like, okay, I'm going to commit to this.
That's awesome though. I mean, having all those different things and working at so many different venues, I'm sure you learned different ways from each different venue that you worked at, right?
Yeah, I did. And you know, it's just a really great way to meet so many different people, you know, so it just is. And you know, just with your job at Body English, you got to meet everyone. Everyone came to Body English on Sunday nights. Then everyone went to the parlor. That was like the thing. So you got to see everyone from all the different nightclubs and industry and meet everybody. And I feel like I kind of got to do that in a way too, just by working with all the different companies at one point or another over the years.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, like Hard Rock, I spent 10 years at Hard Rock. Everyone thought I was crazy for quitting, but I'm like, all I knew was the Hard Rock way. Like I wasn't evolving. Yeah. I wasn't growing. I wasn't changing. I had to go work at other venues and try different things just to evolve as a person, as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, as, you know, as me.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one really great thing about all this time in hospitality is if you are smart, you can learn how to leverage these relationships to like move into like your next stage of life. So whatever it is you want to do, there's, you know, even if it's just getting advice from somebody to start your own business or, you know, go in a different direction. There's somebody that we have met over the years that works in that industry, you know, that you can use as a mentor.
Yeah. And that's one thing, like a lot of people we talk to, you know, they feel like they don't have any skills or any experience because they've been in hospitality for so long, but we try to tell them that, you know, the skills and stuff that you acquire in hospitality can help you progress later in life. And especially, I mean, the contacts alone that we get, you know, being in nightlife and meeting so many people, especially out here in Vegas, we're so privileged that everyone comes to Vegas eventually.
Yep. Well, I used to say, I have this saying that it's not what you know, it's who you party with.
That
was like the thing for years. It's like, you know, they say the best deals were done over lap dances at the Rhino at 5 a.m. Some of the best business deals out there. And I mean, it's true. That's when people are like loosen up and they get to know someone, they build trust with another person. So it's, yeah, it's definitely interesting, but I feel like it was very beneficial to a lot of us in many ways.
It's funny talking about deals at the Rhino. I'm like, building trust is up, but then also the blackmail. Like, listen.
Yeah, right. What was it, like the K Kelly restaurants that came up on the credit card bills? Like, so you wouldn't know that you like blew half the corporate like card money on a Rhino.
Oh yeah. I used to have friends that come in for like the conventions that they wouldn't step foot in the convention center. It was like all just like partying, clubbing, after hours, everything. I mean, I was their tour guide.
Yep. Good times.
God, I miss those chicken wings. I was actually talking to somebody earlier about those.
Yeah, they're good. I guess the Rhino is open now though. So I heard they did reopen recently.
Mm-hmm. Might have to pop in there for some wings.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll join you.
So do you, so you're still kind of a little bit in hospitality, but now you're like up at the higher level.
Yeah. Well, what I kind of have been able to do is, you know, is get, I guess, would say like unstuck from having to, you know, when you work in hospitality for a really, really long time, you start to feel stuck on like having to be in the club every single night, you know, just having to do the same routine every single day, and it gets tiring. And I think we all reach a level of burnout. So I've kind of been able to, pivot away from having to like be at the clubs all the time to start my own business and more or less just offer a consulting service or book DJ. So, you know, it's great because I still work with the nightclubs without having to be in the nightclubs. When I do really big events, like let's say I have a YG or a Nelly night at Park, I do go. I don't have to go, but I like to go because I think it's very important to meet the people that you're working with and, you know, establish that relationship with them, to have a drink with them. So I'm in a nightclub maybe two nights a month, but it's more like it's elective and I actually have to be there. So I like it because it lets me set my own hours. I work for myself. I don't really have to answer to anyone. It's, you know, if I want to get paid, I have to work harder. And that's basically it.
How do you think your transition was from going from, you know, like passing out flyers to where you are now? Was it natural progression or did the, what it, was like?
It wasn't. And I kind of had a forceful push because, you know, a lot of people it's hard to like take that leap and leave. I was with the Light Group for 6 years, you know, working in the corporate office every day from like 10 to 5 and then having to be in the venues at night or having to be at the pools during the day. And, you know, that was my life for 6 years. And, you know, it was just, I kept getting promotions, kept getting raises, and I probably would have stayed on that path for a long time until one day I was just like, I can't do this anymore, you know. But I got pregnant with Kennedy in 2012, and I worked for 5 months while I was pregnant. I opened up Lily. I was still doing the bank. And then I was just like, you know, I can't do this while I'm pregnant. I just can't. I'm tired. You know, I want to like sleep all day. I can't do these hours. So because of that, I was forced to quit. And I was going to maybe come back like after I had Kennedy. But, you know, I like to work and I was pretty bored during the downtime that I had. So it was during that time that I partnered with Jack Colton on jackcolton.com. And helped him with his business. And then I also started Blackout Artists. So because I had that, you know, 6 months I was taking off work or whatever, I had the free time to take advantage of that time. Just, I mean, as a lot of us had this free time during COVID, you know, it was just, I could have just sat around and ate Cheetos and watched TV all day, but I was like, no, I'm going to try and do something. So that's what I did. And then I just never looked back. I never like felt like I needed to go back and like be an employee at a nightclub again.
That's awesome. And that's what so many people get stuck in. They know that like they have that safety net. Oh, I can go back and cocktail another year, 2 years,
yeah,
which ends up being 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
And you really have to kind of get rid of that safety net in order to keep push yourself forward.
You do. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. You have to get rid of it, you know? And I mean, there's some things that I will say that like helped. Like I had a decent amount of savings at the time. So I was able to financially take that risk as well. You know, and I know a lot of people don't, but it also comes down to how well you can save your money or not when you're in this industry, because it comes really quick and it goes really quick, as you know. So, you know, that's always that's a good thing, is if you're able to, you know, save a little bit of a cushion. So you, when you are burned out, you are willing to want to take that next step, you can, you know, still survive while taking, you know, 4, 5, 6 months to like figure out your own business, or because things, you just, you know, when you start your own business, it doesn't, you're not making money overnight. It takes a little bit of time, you know, I would say at least 6 months to start, you know, becoming something that you're, you know, comfortable with, like, okay, this is all I want to do and I'm going to grow this and I'm able to eat off of this.
Yeah. A lot of people don't see all the hard work and effort that goes into, you know, being an entrepreneur, all they see is like, oh, you got lucky. Like, you missed the 10 years of me busting my butt behind the scenes in order to get
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I started Blackout, like the first thing I did was set up meetings with every single nightclub and like bring my roster. And I was like, can I book my DJs? I thought that was gonna be easy. I thought, oh, I know her. I know these guys. And yet fine. Like, they like, wasn't easy. Like I started Blackout, I think in 2000, I officially launched in 2013, but I started in 2012, and it wasn't until maybe like 5 months after starting it that I got my very first booking. It was a gig for a grand opening at a nightclub in Cabo. And I was like, so excited. Like, oh my God, I finally have a booking for one of my guys. This is amazing. You know, now it's growing and it's great. We're doing bookings all over the world, actually. But it was, it took a minute to get that first booking done.
That's awesome. I love the name too. I remember when you first came out of it, Blackout Artist. I'm like, that's so fitting.
Well, we were trying to think of a name for it. And like, we always had this like saying like, oh, it's never a good party until you black out. And like our DJs were really, really great at like drinking and holding their own alcohol. The people who hung out around them at like the bank on Sunday nights would like wake up the next day, like, I don't know what the fuck happened last night. So it was like, well, you're going to hang out with one of our guys, you're probably going to black out because you can't keep up with their level of drinking. So kind of that's how the name evolved.
Yeah. I think I blacked out every single DJ in Las Vegas. So yeah, I know.
Yeah. 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 You can't keep up with them. You can try, but these guys are professionals. These guys are like drinking all night, but.
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of booze that they can consume and then still like be on point while DJing and everything. Like it's talent.
It is. But you want to hear something funny? It's actually, it's not really funny, but so, you know, we didn't have DJs working for quite a long time. And then we just started getting some bookings in like Texas and Florida when things started opening back up. Sending these DJs out to these gigs was like sending like a woman had just had a baby and hadn't drank for 9 months, like out to the club for the first time. I mean, I never get complaints about my DJs ever. And I think I had a complaint from every single club that booked them. Like, well, it was good, but you know, they blacked out at like 1 a.m. Yeah. Sorry about that. Like, I need to tell them like, they can't go into it the same like level that they were before.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, being out of the nightlife, you know, and do a different lifestyle and not in it. I'm sure they're not, you know, pounding shots and stuff, just sitting at home. But once they get back in the environment and you still think you can hang like you could.
Yeah, you can. You can't. Not at all.
I was just talking to somebody earlier this morning about our old lifestyle. Like, can you imagine all the shots and stuff that we did in the night? Like, I couldn't do that nowadays. There's no way.
No way. And we were fully functional. It was like, we were like shots until like 3 a.m. and then just like going to the office at like 9 or 10, like just, you know, after we would have breakfast at the Rhino after our shots all night. Like just, it was like, I felt like we were in this era where we would just go and go and go until we couldn't go anymore. And you'd sleep for like a day and then you just go again.
Yeah. That's why like we usually went out like 6 nights a week and there was one day of rest.
Yeah, exactly. That is what it was. We were fucking nuts.
Hey, we made it out the other side. We're still healthy and, you know, have the war stories to tell about it. So I think we got out okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think your favorite part about working in hospitality and like your least favorite part about working in hospitality?
I mean, my favorite part about working in hospitality for sure, I would say it's two things. I'd say for one, it's the people that you get to meet. I love that I've been able to meet people from all over the world working in hospitality. And for two, you know, when you're working in hospitality, you're really trying to make someone's night or someone's day, or, you know, you're there to make them have a good time and give them a memorable experience. And, you know, that's even what I still love about what I do now is, you know, if I book, like I booked Steve Aoki for a festival in Montana, my hometown in 2018. And you know, they don't have those kind of acts that come through there. So I was like the first one to bring like a really big EDM DJ up there. And, you know, just seeing like the excitement and almost like tears in people's eyes of being able to like go to a festival like that in their own backyard where they would normally have to travel to, seeing one of their favorite DJs and just like the pure joy on everyone's face. Like that was like really fucking cool. Like, okay, like I really made all these people's nights by deciding I wanted to do this event here. So yeah, I love that part of this too.
That's awesome. What about like your least favorite part about it?
I think my least favorite part are unknown variables and things that are out of your control. As you know, there's so much in hospitality that's out of our control. Especially when I'm working with artists, you know, I can have an artist booked and like 700 tickets sold and then the artist misses his flight and the whole thing is canceled, you know? Or if you're working at a nightclub and, you know, you're depending on this income to make a car payment and there's really fucking slow weekends and you make no money, you know, that's just an unknown variable. It's like, you're depending on everyone else doing their job to make sure the venue is busy. You're depending on artists showing up to make sure that everyone is happy. It's just, there's just so many, you know, ups and downs in this business. You know, the highs are really high, the lows can be really low.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially like, you know, in your business booking DJs, like especially now, like in mention of day life and day clubs, you're booking people months out. You don't know if it's going to rain, if it's going to be a cold front, if you know what's going to happen. That could kill it.
And I was doing programming for this club in New York City all of summer 2019 called Profundo. And what I didn't really realize when I signed up to do this account was how much it rained in New York. And I was moving shows like left and right. And it was so stressful and annoying. It was just like, okay, we put all this work into all this marketing and booking flights and booking the artists. And then I'm just moving it 2 days before. And then everyone's up in arms about it. And we're refunding tickets and, you know, rescheduling shit. And it's just, yeah, I mean, you can't help the weather, you know, you can't control that. So just, I think all the variables that are out of our control is probably the most frustrating part about working in hospitality. And I would say for those who work in nightclubs, the hours can be really hard on your body too.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people who like, you know, obviously people come to Vegas to party or, you know, go to New York or go to Montana and stuff to go party. They don't realize all the stuff behind the scenes that make that experience happen.
Yes. Uh-huh. There is so much work behind the scenes that everyone puts in for just, you know, and I mean, I'm seeing it right now. I'm working on a festival project actually for late 2021, and it's so much work. And I've been working on this since November. I really started full time the beginning of January. But I'm like, God, I'm thinking so much work is going to be almost a year of work for an 8-hour event. That's crazy.
Yeah.
The amount of work that goes in for one festival. This, we actually just moved to it 2 days. So it's for 16 hours of festival time, but it's just, it is. It's like people are working on these 1 day, 2 day festival events for almost an entire year.
Festivals have to be a lot more difficult than just say like a nightclub. A nightclub, you know, the venue's there. You got indoor plumbing, you know, which is one thing. You know, you have all this stuff there. Festivals, you got to bring everything in. You got to think everything down to the very last little bit. Like, you know, like plumbing, you know, you need porta potties. Where are people going to go to the bathroom?
Exactly. That's one of the main things on the checklist. It's like, you have to bring in all your own electricity, like everything. So it's crazy how it's just like not a turn. Well, some of the venues we are working with it is turnkey, but like some of the ones that are out of park, it's like, we're literally just building it up from the ground, you know?
Yeah. There's so many moving parts. You have to, you know, plan out the different flows, which way people are going to come in and entrances, exits. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it that people don't realize. Like you said, it's a year of planning for a 2-day event.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So I hope all you people that go to festivals appreciate the people that are behind the scenes busting their butt all year for you to have a, you know, 8-hour experience.
Yes. Thank you.
So now if you can go back and start over in your hospitality career, would you think you'd do it the same as you did? Or do you think you'd kind of like make some different choices, different plans?
No, I think I would do it the same as I did. So, you know, there was the one time in like 2017, 2018, I would say, where I was feeling stuck and I was like, you know, I would say it's almost like this. I felt like I was watching a basketball game. Like the basketball game was like the game of life. And I was like on the bleachers watching it. I wasn't playing, you know, and I'm like, I wanted to be participating because I haven't made any new moves lately. I was just kind of doing the same thing I'd been doing. And so that's when I decided to go to New York and take on the Profundo account, which was a day club out there. And just mix up what I've been doing for like the past 3 or 4 years. And moving to New York was always like a huge dream of mine. Like I think I envisioned myself like living in New York City and like dominating that city, and that's where I belonged. And so I did that. I moved out there in May and I was there for 4 months, but just being there for 4 months, I had a studio on the Upper West Side. I was going to the pool club like 2 days a week. You know, being in the mix of, I had an office actually right by the Empire State Building that I used all summer. So just like working in New York and being in the city and going to the pool club and, you know, just being in the action of all that, like I felt like I had accomplished something and I was like, been at peace with myself. So then I moved back to Vegas and I felt like a new person. Like it was great. So now I'm like, I feel like that now anytime if I feel like that way again, like the way to feel unstuck is to make a drastic change in your life. And that's, I think, all I need to do. So right now I feel great. I still feel good. I have some new projects I'm working on, and I'm doing some, a couple other side hustles right now too. But that really, I think, kind of changed my whole perspective and changed my life, was just going to New York, even if it was only for 4 months. It was well worth it.
That's awesome. And that is so important, because we become so accustomed to just going to the same job and, you know, the same thing, going the same repetitive routine, especially in, you know, bars and nightclubs and restaurants and stuff. It's so repetitive, and it's honestly mindless. You don't have to think, you're not really challenged. You just kind of go through it. You're going through the motions, and it doesn't really help you grow or evolve as a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It kind of becomes like one long repetitive day.
It's a good Groundhog Day.
Yeah. I understand that.
So when did you think you knew you wanted to, you know, stop being on the front lines and be more, you know, the high level overseeing venues instead of like being at the front lines working in them?
Well, I think as I've got older, it got harder to drink, got harder to have to like be somewhere every day at the same time and, you know, be and keep up. And I mean, I can only speak for myself, where I only have like two speeds. I have to kind of either like not be drinking, or I'm just like, you too. Yeah. Or I'm like the one standing in the bar pouring shots in people's mouth, like, let's fucking go. So as I've gotten older, it's been very difficult to be that other person that does that. So now it's like, I enjoy getting up at like 7 a.m. every day and, you know, having my coffee and then getting into logging my computer and just sending emails and making phone calls and, you know, working behind the scenes.
That's awesome. Now we talked about, I know you're like a very admirable entrepreneur. Did you always have projects, like even back then, were you always like trying to work on side hustles and doing different things? Or you think your like true entrepreneurial spirit kind of came out later?
You know, I've always like had different ideas or things I wanted to do. I think working at the Light Group all those years gave me an outlet for a lot of my ideas, because part of my job was to create all the like the local industry parties and come up with different, you know, marketing strategies. And that was just, you know, any idea that I really had, they would give me money to just run with. So it was just, you know, super fun. And there's like kind of endless of the things that we could do. But I think once I got done with that, I had to then, you know, kind of realize I didn't have that funding to fund my ideas, first of all. But if I had an idea that I like really thought was going to be great, I just kind of have to do it, because if I don't do it, I'll always kind of think of like, what if I had done it? And it'll drive me crazy. So usually when I come up with a stupid idea, and I'm sure we all do, we all have an entrepreneurial spirit, I'll like, if I think I need to do this business, and I go, I buy the web domain or whatever, you know, I'm like, I'll then like sit on it in a week and not for a week. And I'll be like, okay, but if a week from now, I still feel like this is a good idea, then I'll try to do something with it. But otherwise I just kind of like let it go. So the first one I really, really decided to move on and do something with besides Blackout Artists was Urban Palm in 2015. I don't know if you remember that. It was like an on-demand personal assistant.
Yep.
We ended up putting probably close to $100,000 of it or of our own money into that. And we gave it a run for a good year, and then it just kind of fell apart. But, you know, I'm glad I did it, even though it was a waste of money and time, if you want to look at it that way, because I think failure is important too. I think you can learn a lot from that and not repeat the same mistakes moving forward. So I think I'm very grateful that I did have that one big failure in my life. So I'm not, you know, because I think we all need to have it at one point or another.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that was about the same time I had a room service San Diego as a food delivery.
I remember that. We were at Park. We were talking about it.
A food delivery company in downtown San Diego. We're delivering food at all the mid-rises and high-rises in downtown on electric bikes. I mean, the business model was great.
It was a great.
That was right when, you know, Uber and Uber Eats and Grubhub and DoorDash and all that stuff was coming on. And, you know, they had the big budgets. All the locals loved supporting.
I do remember that. That was such a great business, Sean.
Yeah, I thought so.
So what happened with that one?
Again, I was going up against, you know, DoorDash, Uber Eats, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they had bigger marketing budgets and, you know, better apps. I did design an app. We did have an app for it, but theirs was just better. And then me and the business partner kind of went in and had to dissolve the company. We didn't see eye to eye. I was doing 90% of the work and he was doing about 10%, expecting more.
Yeah, but you know what? You jump back up and you go into the next thing. It's just what we do.
Yep. I did just ride those electric bikes around San Diego. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, that was fun. So yeah, I mean, Yeah, that was kind of, like I said, that was the big failure of a project I had. And then, you know, my most recent side hustle has nothing to do with hospitality, or at least nightlife, daylife, is I'm starting a mobile coffee business. So I purchased this cart from China a little over a year ago. I have had a lot of problems with it because I purchased it from China. So I kind of learned a lesson when people say buy American, that's why.
Was it on Alibaba or what?
I went on Alibaba. Yeah. But I was able to like design it from scratch, and the girl I was working with over there was actually great. But then they shipped it over here and it showed up and, you know, it's beautiful, but I realized the whole thing was wired for Chinese power. So I had to get the wiring all redone, and then everything was too small to meet the health inspection codes here. So I had to get like all the sinks redone and a refrigerator. And it's just actually my handyman's here right now at my house. We're working on it, putting the new water pumps in because they were too small. So hopefully this will be done, ready to go by spring at some point, but it's about a year behind, but I'm going to get it.
That's awesome. Well, did you end up picking the name for it yet?
Gold Cup Coffee Bar is what I'm going to call it. So I want to have it. Yeah. I want all the cups to be gold. So when people are walking around with a gold cup, they know like where you bought their coffee from.
Nice. I love it. I remember when you posted something on Facebook about like different logos and stuff.
That was before I found out that it was wired for Chinese power. So I was like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have this up in like 3 weeks. And then the inspector comes to like plug everything in and turn it on. They're like, yeah, you're fucked. Like, go get your whole thing redone and then call me.
That's one of the most important things I think about entrepreneurship is the failure process. A lot of people don't see that, and it's, you know, it's not really glorified like it should, but you have to fail a bunch of times in order to succeed. And you learn a lot from all those failures.
You do. And it also just it builds resilience and like keeps you like, okay, well, instead of being discouraged, this is a problem. How am I going to solve this problem to move on? You know, instead of like, oh, well, I guess it didn't work out. You know, like you can't, if you have an entrepreneurial spirit and you want to be successful in life, you can't have that kind of mentality. Like you have to you have to have a solution for every single problem that comes out, or you're going to get absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, does failing suck? Yes. Does losing money on a project suck? Yes. But what you learn from those experiences helps you grow later on. So you won't make those same mistakes, or, you know,
exactly.
You can conquer the other obstacles that come up in your next progress.
Yep. Yep. And it's just money. It comes and goes. I mean, we all realize that this year. we're expecting to make like this much money this year. Like, nope.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Yeah. This year's been, I mean, it's forced a lot of people to really pivot and kind of analyze their lives and kind of figure out what to do. Like we were talking about before we started this, a lot of people are just sitting on the couch kind of waiting for things to go back. And a lot of people have pivoted and, you know, went in a completely different direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for everyone who was able to do that, like this is so admirable because, you know, we all were in the same boat. This was all hard on everybody. And I think we all though had that opportunity to either pivot and, as you said, and go in a new direction, or sit around and wait. And, you know, that's my whole motto right now for 2021 is learning to live life on the offense, because I feel like this whole past year, myself, so many of us were just on the defense, like, oh, well, what's the government going to say? Are we going to be able to like go out next week? Can we work? Can we not work? Like, you know, what do we do? You know, governor, and it's like, you know, we were just in defense of whatever we were told, instead of like, okay, no, I'm going to take control of my day. I'm going to take control of my time and my life. And I'm going to start on this project, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to set these goals. And, you know, if it's to be healthy and the gym is closed, I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm going to find other ways to work out, just whatever it is. It's just like, I think waking up every day with a plan and attacking it on the offense, as opposed to just sitting around and waiting to react to whatever you're told to do.
Yeah. And that's one thing, the gym thing was the real hurting part for us. Like we were going to True Fusion, literally probably taking 10 classes a week at True Fusion, was loving
it. Job.
Had a great network of people, everything there. And then they shut down for 6 months. So Crazy. We like working out in the heat. So we literally went to like Walmart and bought space heaters, humidifiers.
Wow.
Turned one of our rooms into
my gosh.
A sweatshop.
You see? That's awesome.
And we're watching, you know, YouTube videos and just doing our own classes in a little tiny, you know, 8-foot by 8-foot room.
Well, that's amazing that you were able to do that. You know, that's inspiring. That's like the one thing that I have not been great at is going to the gym and stuff. I feel like that's a big part of like being successful in life. It's like keeping your body and, you know, healthy and working out. So I need to get on that tip
I have to. It's the only way I can wake up in the morning. I wake up, splash water in my face, drink some lemon water, and go straight to the gym. And that's where, like, I'll be on the treadmill or on the bike. You know, that's where I check in emails and do my thing for the morning, see what I need to attend to, and then do my workout. And then I'll come home and I'll do, you know, breathing and the guided meditation, and then I get to work. And it's really awesome. Helped me focus, like, throughout my day.
Yeah, it does help. Yeah, I think I'm going to challenge myself to try to start going to the gym.
I'll start there. But when I was, you know, bartending and, you know, coming home at 6, 7 in the morning, I'd sleep till 2, whatever. And I'd go about my day. It just, whatever happened. I had no like structure one bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How'd you feel like that day you knew you were going to go in and like resign and, you know, you knew that you didn't have a guaranteed paycheck. You were going to go, it was, you know, you had to make your own thing happen or else you weren't going to eat essentially.
So I think that I went in with the like idea that I wasn't going to just quit. I think I was going to go in and say like, listen, I'm pregnant and I can't work in the clubs like I am, but I'll stay on in any kind of a smaller capacity you want me to. And I that was in December of 2012, I think. And then they asked me if I would stay on and open up Lily. So I said, okay, I will do that. I'll open Lily up for you. So I opened up Lily, and then I think I was just consulting for Bear Pool for the rest of the summer, but I didn't like have to be there. I was more or less like training the new marketing director to come in, and they were giving me probably a quarter of what I was making before, just to like basically hand them all my notes and say like, this is what you do. So, and then actually it kind of worked out. I would say fully left Light Group, because even after I left as an employee, that's kind of when I signed on with JackColton.com, and I had Blackout, and then they started using Jack Colton for some events and booking Blackout for some, you know, DJ stuff. So I still was, you know, always like in the mix with the Light Group, and which is now Hakkasan Group, you know, and I still am today. My DJs still play all the clubs when they're open.
That's awesome. So you think like all the connections you made, you know, throughout your hospitality career is really translated to, you know, your later endeavors.
Yeah. Had I not had the connections I had, I would not have been able to do Black Artists, because it's so based. I mean, the DJs are great, but it's a lot of it is just, you know, me having to pick up the phone and call these people. I'm like, you better fucking book my DJs, you know, like, okay. Like, and if you're unhappy with them, you don't have to ever book them again, but you got to at least book them once. And then they usually are happy with them. So
that's awesome. And that's like you said, a lot of those conversations that are relationships that happen, you know, over chicken wings at Rhino at 10 a.m. or, you know,
yeah, exactly.
After hour shots.
Yeah.
How do you think, how's the lifestyle change been for you? Like not having to be in that element. Now you can pick and choose when you want to go to the clubs.
It's been great. And just, you know, my stress level is just, even though it's a different kind of stress, it's just down, because I feel like when you just have like one job or like one client or one person you're depending on, it gets stressful because you're dependent on that person or on that job. So, you know, if they're in a bad mood and they're shitty to you all week, it like affects your mood. Or if you didn't get that raise you wanted, that's like devastating. You know, it's just like, you're really, and when you have like your own business, though, with like multiple accounts, multiple clients, sure, it can get like a little annoying having to deal with a bunch of different personality types, but you're not like dependent on one thing or one person to like, you know, pay your bills. It's just, everything's diversified. So I really do love that part of like having my own business.
That's awesome. How do you feel like, you're happier and healthier now that you've kind of like transitioned out?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've always been a pretty happy person, but I mean, there's definitely times I felt like where I was like to myself, like, I can't do this anymore. You know, like I remember like, I think my second to last summer at Bear being like, God, I've been here like four or five seasons. I'm like, I don't know if I can do another season, but then I would always just sign on for like another season, you know, just because by the time like 3 months had passed, I was kind of ready to do it again. And, you know, but, yeah. And then I even like remember when I was doing Bank Sundays, even though I had Blackout Artists, they were hiring Blackout to be at Bank Sunday every night. This was like in 2014 or 2015. And even that one night a week committing to be at the bank was so much on me. And I just remember like being at this right before I went to Park. And I was like, God, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't think I can force myself to come in one more Sunday. And yeah, I haven't felt that way in a long time, where I'm just like forcing myself to get through the day or to get through something. So, you know, now I do get up and I'm excited about new opportunities that might come up or the new projects I'm working on. And like, things are always changing. So it's always something exciting and new.
Yeah. And then that's what's so hard, like in our line of work, was that, think about like when you first started Bank Sundays, you're so excited, love it. And then after a few years, I was like, oh God, I got to go back on Sunday.
I mean, when you're just doing it over and over again, it's the same thing. And it's like, you know, how many times can you do like the top 20 most influential people just change it to something else? Like, how many of those parties did we do?
You did a lot.
Yeah, we did a lot.
but I mean, it was so fun too, especially, you know, the Sundays was not so many tourists, it was a lot more locals. So you're really hanging out with all your friends and like throwing a house party for all your friends.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the Bank Sundays, like, I mean, Body English Sundays was like that forever. And then it really did translate into Bank, where it's just like, you know, everyone did go to like Yellowtail first and then go have a drink at Lily and then Bank. And it was like, you know, very welcoming group of people. It was like, I don't think anyone ever felt like they didn't belong there or shouldn't be there. And that was kind of like this whole like family, like feeling every week. And, you know, but those things, it can't last forever. And like nothing lasts forever. So it's like, you know, you want to enjoy it while it's happening. And now I think we can look back and appreciate it, but I wouldn't ever say like, oh, I hope it goes back to that, because, you know, it was really great for that time of our lives, but now it's like time for something else.
Yeah. And that's the problem, that, you know, people get so caught up and so stuck and they're like, oh, it's great, I can do this forever. But then something switches in you and you're like, I don't want to do this in forever.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I keep seeing now, like everyone's posting like the pictures of the nightclubs and they're like, we can't wait to get back to this. And I'm kind of like, I can wait. I don't know if I want to be in a crazy ass nightclub right away again.
Yeah, that's funny. I was talking to somebody earlier and they're like, dude, I walk past a nightclub now and I need a nap.
Yeah. I know. It's like, I get PTSD.
I got invited out the other day and someone was like, oh, we're meeting at like 11. I'm like, PM? Oh my God.
Man, yeah, man, I would hear that a lot, but I'm like, no.
Remember, like, we used to make dinner plans at 9 p.m., like, 9 steakhouse at 9. That was, like, the thing.
9 at 9? It was. It really was. Yeah, 9 was even a little early. I feel like it was 10 o'clock if you're, like, going out. It's like, you do your dinner at, like, 9:30, 10, and then, you know, you're walking to the club by, like, 11:30, 12.
Yeah, so. I would never leave my house till like, midnight most times. And people are like, we're not going out? I'm like, no, I'll go, like, 12, 12:30. I'm like, but I mean, that's when, you know, you don't want to be the first one there. You want to get there and walk and see the action. And
it was like, you left your house. If you didn't do dinner first, you literally left your house at like 12.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Thinking about that now, like, I'm in like deep REM sleep by 12.
Yeah. And you know, I don't even think this new generation of kids are doing it. Like, it's like, it's not like we're like, what, did we just have so much energy because we're young? But I like look at these new generation of kids and they'll go to a festival for 3 or 4 days and go hard, but they're not going out 6 nights a week till 4 or 5 in the morning like we were.
No. They're a very soft generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They couldn't handle what we did.
No, there'll never be an era like it again. Not in the near future, at least.
There really won't. It's the cool part about like when I started doing this podcast, I'm obviously talking to a lot of people who have been in the industry for, you know, years, have made it out, and just bringing up all these old memories, and everyone's like, God, everyone feels so blessed for the time that we had. Cause it's changed so much. The invention of bottle service and stuff.
Yeah.
It kind of killed like the freedom and the, you know, being able to walk around and just talk to people and, you know, all this stuff. Cause now you're like, okay, you have a table. If you walk out of the table, security is just ushering you around and, you know, you're not meeting as many people. Cause you might meet the people next to you and the people on this side of the table. But other than that, you're staring at your phone, you're talking to the, you know, 6, 8 people that you came in with.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too. Well, you just mentioned is phones. It's like, we were really on our phones back then. So everyone was like very in the moment of things. You know, if you got a photo, it was, you know, Tracy Lee was right next to you with the camera. Like, okay, it's for napkin nights. But, you know, I think we were just so in the moment. And I like what you said just about talking to everyone too. And I mean, you worked at Body English, so you probably didn't get experience the same way a lot of us did. But, you know, we were there every single Sunday and everyone had like the same people had the same tables every single week. And you could just literally make your way around the club and it would take you an hour to stop and talk to every single person. And that's just what people did. It's just, they just like, okay, they have their table, but they're going to do a lap and they're going to go talk to everyone, you know, and then maybe come back and then maybe go to the bar or whatever. It was just it was almost like our playground every single week.
Yeah, I remember like when I used to go out, you know, pre-Body English, you know, like Tuesday night was Studio 54, like Wednesday night was Red Dragon. And you walk in the door and you had to shake like, you know, 50 people's hands and say hi to people before you even made it to the bar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you like missed a week, it was like total FOMO.
Yeah. Then now you walk in the club and you get ushered right to your table, you get dropped off and boom, there, here's your spot. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so definitely.
Hopefully, I mean, the nightlife is always evolving and changing. So hopefully when things come back, it'll get more to the organic, you know, going out and meeting people in the, you know, get rid of the whole VIP bottle service. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen when nightlife comes back, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't either. And now we have, you know, Resorts World's coming into the mix. I don't know what's going to happen with that. And the Wynn, I hear they're kind of battling right now for like talent and stuff. But there's going to be a lot of changes. That's for sure.
How is that? So that kind of hurt nightlife too, because these exorbitant amount, these DJs are getting paid, you know, clubs now have to increase, you know, admission, drink prices are through the roof. I mean, it's insane. Yeah. That people can't afford to go out anymore, especially like today's generation. They're not going to go out and blow $500 just on, you know, rounds of shots.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that was the miscalculation with Chaos is they were like, you know, they're paying their DJs and their talent is okay. Well, we're going to make all this money. And, you know, they, to their credit, they were busy, you know, when they had like Marshmallow and it was slam, but the people that were coming were not people that were spending money. So, you know, they were killing it with GA, but the tables weren't, they weren't getting $10,000 minimums for the tables. You know, you can get that out of the wind because of the customers that stay there, but you know, they just weren't getting that at the Palms. So.
Yeah. And the club's forking out so much money on these talent and stuff, you know, $100,000 DJs and stuff. They're playing $100,000 before the doors open.
$100,000 is not even a lot of money now. No, I remember $100,000 used to be the ceiling for talent. Like if you were paying $100,000 for someone, it was like, holy shit. And now it's like, that's like a mid-level DJ. It's crazy. Like some of these guys are getting like $400,000 a night.
that's insane. I mean, but you have clubs that make, you know, $1 million a night, it's justified, but still, I mean, just to have that much. And just like we talked about earlier, anything could happen, you know, say, you know, they miss their flight or, you know, if it's a day club, the weather could hit and, you know, so the clubs are gonna lose money, a lot of money on those variables.
Yeah, it's true. It is true.
What do you think? Like, obviously, you know more about the DJ world than I do, since all the clubs have been closed down for, you know, the last year, really. Do you think all these like big high-end DJs are going to kind of drop their prices and start playing like other places? No. And how's that going to affect the lower tier guys?
No, it's kind of crazy. So, you know, one of my wishes or hopes during this whole COVID thing, just because I come from the talent world, is that, you know, there would be a correction in the market following this. So people would be like, okay, you know, that we were so high and that, you know, people kind of come back down to earth and be like, we need to... not, you know, all these clubs would come together and say, let's kind of start over and slowly bring back some DJs in, or, you know, since we're going to dip our feet in it, we're offering $50,000 instead of $100,000, or the people we were paying $400,000 to, we're now going to offer $150,000 base with a bonus tier structure. I think that's what everyone was hopeful, but it's just not happening that way. You know, we have Resorts World is coming back into Vegas and they're coming in with an open checkbook and writing huge number offers to these same DJs, and Wynn is saying, well, no, you're not taking my DJs. We're going to offer more. And now they're battling it. And so now you have this like kind of battle between these two properties. And I think there are some other properties that are more like, okay, we actually have to show P&Ls. They're not over offering to people, but those two properties are not doing anything helpful for the market right now.
that's unfortunate. I mean, it's funny with talking about Chaos and they're like, oh, they don't, you know, the Fertittas don't care about money. I'm like, they don't care if they lose money. I'm like, trust me, someone has a checkbook and they see it keep going negative. They care about losing money.
They're going to eventually care. Yeah.
And
that's kind of what's going to happen here. Like, I feel like, you know, I don't know what the clientele Resorts World is going to be. If they are successful in taking Wynn's clientele, then okay, maybe, you know, the Wynn is probably, I would say, the only venue who can really justify paying the numbers they pay because they have such a high clientele that come in. You know, and they do X amount of tables that are each spending $10,000-$20,000 minimums, they're going to make back that money they're spending on talent relatively quickly. But, you know, I think all these other properties, it doesn't make sense. And it really just fucks the market up because, you know, if you're another club at a hotel that, you know, you don't have that same kind of a budget, like you're kind of just left booking the people that aren't going to the top venues and, you know, you're going to struggle. So as we were seeing, like a lot of nightclubs, you know, we're struggling out here.
And do you think I mean, we were talking about all the demise of, you know, the revenue and the $10,000 customers are becoming few and far between. Like, how long is it sustainable?
Yeah, I don't know. And then I think it too is like, you know, these customers get older. They're not looking to, you know, be drinking till 3, 4, 5 in the morning and spending all this money on booze. And I will think there's one exception to this. And I think that's the pool parties. I think that pools are still going to stay relevant for a long time. And that's really what people want to do. They want to get fucked up during the day. You know, it's just, that's, no, it's just not cool anymore to like be at Dre's at 6, 7 in the morning, cracked out like it was when we were kids. So, you know, I think everyone's like, now the pools are still going to be like a quite a big thing and busy for a while.
I agree. I personally would take a day life over a night life all day long.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we're not knocking Dre's. Trust me, guys. We've had a lot of good times there.
Yeah. And I mean, Dre's nightclub's killing it with their, you know, they're with their programming. They really are onto something with, you know, going that hip hop direction that they went in. But yeah, you're going to catch me fucking dead at Dre's after 4 a.m. No way.
I remember leaving there, you know, the sun is up, people are jogging, and I'm just like, oh God.
Yes, right? You have to like get gas on the way home, and like family just leaving church, and you're like, okay.
That's when you're like really reevaluating your life decisions. Like, what am I doing?
Oh God.
A lot of good times. Still wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, for sure.
What's some advice you think you can give other people who are like starting to see like, okay, I can't do this forever. I got to work on an exit plan. What's some advice you can see to kind of guide them in the right direction? And what do you think they should start focusing on to get out of the industry?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's kind of a couple of things. The first one is to save some money if they can. So, you know, I feel like if somebody is in a position where they've worked in nightlife a really long time, they're probably in a higher position. They probably have a good enough salary where they can support saving some money if they're smart, you know, with it. So, you know, I don't think it's a ton of money, just maybe like 30 grand, just basic life to live off of for, you know, however many months. So I think that's doing that. And then it's, you know, literally just, I would say start on your side hustle, but it's hard to really put so much focus into it when you're so distracted with your other job. So, you know, realistically, I think if somebody really wants to get out of this business, they just have to take a leap of faith and do it. You know, I think that that's really the only way that they're going to get push to starting their own business. And then also just not get discouraged in the beginning. Like, know that it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of time invested into it. And you're probably going to have to be working for free for 6 months before you start to see anything come from it. You know, like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. So, and then also just know that Vegas itself will always be here. So just like, you know, if you're working in this industry and you're well-respected and you leave and you want to move to another city or start your own business, like if you decide it's not for you, like you can always go back, whether it's your old job or a job similar to it. Like this industry, especially in the corporate, you know, nightlife, needs really good people. So if you're, it's always going to be here.
How many people do we know have moved away and come back? I'm guilty. Yeah. And I think I've done it.
I'm guilty of it. And it's here, you know, Vegas is great for that. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like, it's always going to be here. Go play, go explore, go try something new and then come back, you know? And then the thing is now is people don't even know where you live. Like people still think I live in San Diego. Like I've lived in San Diego for 10 months in 2014. And people are always like, how's San Diego going, Kalika? I'm like, yeah, well, I've been back in Vegas for 6 years, but so just, you know, these days you can kind of live forever. No one really knows or cares. So
yeah, it's really true, especially now, like everything's gone virtual. I mean, you know, we're doing this over a Zoom meeting, yeah, instead exactly. of in person, because, you know, yeah. Everything's virtual now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're like living in another country. And my friend Jeff, you know, Jeff Agar, he was in Tulum last week with Jesse Waits. And I was just like, oh, how's Jesse doing? Is he working at Resorts World? And he's like, Jesse's been in Bali. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know. You know, just he doesn't really know where everybody is. It doesn't really matter because we are so connected with this interweb now, social media or whatever it may be.
Yeah, it really is. It's funny. I think I missed you in Tulum by like 2 weeks too.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Tulum was kind of been the spot this year.
It really has. Like, I think everyone in the world has gone to Tulum. Tulum yeah. is like what Thailand was in like 2010.
Place closer, so
yeah,
but it is awesome there.
So it's a lot easier. I'm definitely going back. I don't know about you, but I absolutely loved it there.
Oh yeah, I loved it too. I did not like the drive from the airport to Tulum. That was the only thing that was a little bit annoying, but they are building an airport in Tulum. I think it opens in 2023.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So they're building, it's under construction right now. So that's going to change everything once there's an airport there.
Oh, that'll be amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. So we rented a scooter and the guy's like, oh, go past Tulum to like down to this point. And that road, you know, like the road in Tulum, that was just potholes like crazy.
Oh, yeah. Horrible.
3 hours of that. Yeah.
Oh my God. You actually did it all on a scooter?
No. Didn't make it. Broke the muffler off the scooter.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. But, that's what a way to spend one of your vacation days.
Well, I mean, honestly, the cool thing about it is the guy was so nice. He's like, but did you make it? And I'm like, I took the scooter back, you know, to drop it off. I'm like, hey, man, you know, I'm sorry. I broke the muffler. I'm like, dude, that road is rough. Like, I couldn't believe, you know, you even told me to go on that. He's like, but did you make it? I'm like, no. He's like, buddy, I feel so bad. It's so beautiful. I'll take $5 off. So I thought for sure, like, okay, I just bought a scooter in Tulum. They're going to charge me like $2,000 or whatever. They're going to keep my deposit. They're going to charge me all this stuff because that's happened to me. That happened to me in Park City 2 years ago. I snapped a snowmobile in half. Cost me $2,500.
Oh my gosh.
Me and Derek Runtis were going extreme snowmobiling and just jumping. And I decided to snap mine in half, which was fun to play with. So I have a bad habit. I'm probably the last person you want to rent any kind of motorized vehicle to in another country because I ride hard.
Good track record. Yeah. That's right.
The guy was so friendly. He knocked money off. He felt so bad. I gave him I'm like, are you sure, dude? I'm like, he probably lost his job because the owner probably saw the scooter snapped in half and was like, what?
I mean, they have to have some sort of like crazy insurance for these things because just the way the roads are. I rented a car when I was there. And that's like, I think that's why a lot of my frustration was that with that drive, because I rented the car, so I had to drive that freeway and it was just terrible. Yeah, there's just so many little potholes and speed bumps and traffic. And it's like,
yeah, we were going to rent a car and I reached out to people and people were like, it's like 50-50, but advised not to. And like, we got a shuttle, you know, private shuttle from the airport and everything. That's and then, good. You know, one day we rented a scooter and then otherwise it was bikes and just walking around. So it was great.
Yeah, it's good. No, and I was on the drive back too. Like I was hungover as fuck driving back to the airport to Cancun the next morning. And I'm like, I like slept terribly. I think I only slept like 3 hours and I was like just dying, like hungover. And I'm like, I'm not going to even make it to Cancun. I'm like driving, like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I can even do this drive, but I made it. It was like, when I finally made it to the rental car place, I'm like, oh my God, like I can like relax now.
That's the worst thing about trips like that. I hate flying home hungover. I hate traveling hungover so bad. It's like the most miserable experience.
It is. It's my own damn fault, but.
Yeah, it always is. I remember I was on a flight somewhere coming back. I had a layover somewhere and I just wanted to get off the plane. I'm like, I'm going to stay here for the night. I'm not even making my connection. I don't want to be on another plane. I felt so disgusting. I'm like, never again. I think that was the last time I flew hungover. And that was years ago. I'm like, I can't do it anymore. Now, like if I know I'm leaving the next day, I don't drink very much.
You don't drink. Yeah. That's a smart thing to do.
It definitely helps. All right. Kalika, I appreciate your time. I know you're a very busy, busy woman. Is there anything else you want to add before we leave?
That's just, I'm super excited that you're doing this and I love it. I think it's great. And, you know, I think that so many of us want to do that next thing that's beyond hospitality and, you know, working in nightlife. So, hopefully this can be like inspiring, you know, when you have like a collection of all these, interviews and testimonials from people, just, you know, can really help people like get motivated to do that next thing if they're feeling a little bit hesitant.
Yeah, thank you. And that's really why I wanted to do this because, I mean, you as well as I have a lot of friends that are still in hospitality who are just, they're not happy with their lives and they haven't been for a very long time. And they keep saying one more year, one more season. And you've been saying that for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And now with COVID.
I was there at one point. Like I said, I was there. I kept saying one more season. I was up there for 6 years. That's 6 seasons is quite a long time to be at one spot. So.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I was hoping it was a phase because, I mean, realistically, you're making $100,000 a year, but working 3-4 days a week with no real responsibility. Like, you should be able to do that forever. But something changes and then you're not happy. You can't do it. You need out.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a lot of energy, too, for sure, to have to keep up that level of enthusiasm around people all the time.
Yeah. So the whole point of this was to help, you know, inspire and motivate others. That's why I want to share everyone's story to show people that, you know, it is possible. You can do it. You just got to take a chance on yourself and fully commit to it.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, all right. Well, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Sean.
I support and love everything you do. We'll put a link to some of your endeavors at the bottom here too. So other people can check out your stuff and support you as well.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Kalika.
All right. You too. Talk to you soon. Bye. Bye.